I'll be quiet.
Good afternoon. I call to order the House Committee on Consumer Protection and Government Effectiveness. It is Thursday, February 11th. Good afternoon. We have a number of work sessions today, but because most of these bills, or all of these bills, were heard on Thursday when we kind of had limited interaction from the dais, and I thank you everybody for respecting that. I want to make sure that for any of these bills that people have an opportunity to ask questions, so we will probably have some testimony. Is that appropriate during the discussion portion?
Yes.
Okay.
You can call in whenever you like.
Great. So with that, is the Department of Revenue here?
Yep.
Okay. So with that, we're going to open a work session on House Bill 4065. Do you want to give us a quick reminder of that one is? And I know at least Representative Bueller had asked that someone from the Department of Revenue come. So if you could go ahead and come up, thank you. And then, you know, if there's anyone else that we want, we can call them too, colleagues. Go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 4065 establishes procedures for contracting agencies to determine if contractors are delinquent in payments to state agencies and require payment of account or development of payment plan prior to awarding public contract. Requires contracting agency to notify state agency of action. Requires state agency to direct Department of Revenue or private collection agency to cease efforts to collect amounts due upon receiving notice. Becomes operative January 1st, 2017. We have proposed dash one amendments that add the word state before the phrase contracting agency wherever it appears in the bill.
All right, thank you. So I don't know if you have testimony or would you prefer to hear Representative Bueller's questions first?
Madam Chair, I do have testimony,
okay,
but
please.
I did go back and listen to the hearing.
Okay, great. Go ahead and present your testimony and then whatever questions we have.
For the record, Deanna Mack, Department of Revenue. I did go back and listen to the testimony in the hearings, in the prior hearing we had on this procurement bill. And I understand there was quite a few questions about the collection function of the state of Oregon, and much of it was attributed to the Department of Revenue. First, I wanted to express that the liquidated and delinquent account, the liquidated and delinquent accounts receivable report published by your LFO has been recently updated. It's a 2015 number, so the number is no longer 3.2, it's 3.1. But I wanted to share with you much of that money that is owed in to the state is collected by the Oregon Judicial Department. Mm. Much of that is debt. None of that comes into the general fund. It's almost all criminal restitution, child support is collected by Department of Justice, crimes from the court system. Department of Revenue doesn't oversee the collection of that debt unless the OJD decides to send it to our other agency accounts unit, which is the private collections function or centralized collection function for the state of Oregon. The Department of Revenue is responsible for bringing in about 94% of the general fund money that you do spend. And we also have about the debt that is owed to the general fund also represents about 94%. So it stands to reason that that's reasonable since we also bring in that amount. As of the 2015 report, we collect on about $650 million of that is owed to the general fund. We have a very stepped up collection function within our agency, which is not true in many agencies. Department of Revenue does have almost 250 collectors in various parts of the agency. In our personal income tax program, we have about 160. In our other agency accounts program, we have about 65 or so. And in our business tax collections area, where we collect on payroll and corporate tax, we have another 45 or so. So we do have a very stepped up organization. I did want to report on the Secretary of State audit that you guys discussed in the last hearing. This was not an audit that was focused primarily or only on Department of Revenue. It was focused on its statewide collection, and it examined, I think, the top 9 or 10 agencies. So this is a cumulative report. It can't be all attributed to just the work the Department of Revenue does. We do have many tools that we use to actively collect the debt that's owed to the state. It's very much a priority for our agency. And we're working with several members currently, Representative Taylor and Senator Johnson, on a bill, House Bill 4131, that would, in this session, allow us to match information with financial institutions so we know where a debtor actually banks so we can issue a garnishment. That bill is on its way to Ways and Means right now. We are also in the process of posting certain folks, super bad actors, I guess you could say, on our website. And then we worked with, as a result of the Secretary of State audit report in last session, we worked with many proponents on Senate Bill 55. Senate Bill 55 was a bill that allows state agencies to, or actually I should say, it requires state agencies, when they're collecting a Social Security number, to also inform the person that the Social Security number may be used for debt collection purposes. That is one component of the bill. The bill also requires the agencies to work together to offset debt between themselves. And we're in the midst of a pilot project on that exact function with the Department of Transportation as well as the Department of Administrative Services. They have different accounting systems than others, so there's definitely some constraints on how to develop that, but we're in the midst of doing that project now. We've already transferred 24,000 vendor records from the Department of Transportation and compared it against our debtor list. We found less than 5% of them owed business debt and less than 8% of them owed personal income tax debt, over $25. So the next step in that process is for us to identify whether those folks have, whether it's reasonable for us to collect on those folks through offset of their payments that's being made by another agency. An example where that might not be reasonable is if they owe a small balance or perhaps are in a payment plan that we've all agreed to. So we're at that place now. DAS, I know, is working on hiring a position out of Senate Bill 55 to do some oversight. That was one of the big components of the Secretary of State audit, is that they had let go of their position in 2010, and so there wasn't state oversight of the central of the overall collection function. They've, I think that position announcement is already closed, and they plan to do interviews in the next week or so. And they've already stopped, even though they haven't hired that position, they've already started writing rules for the collection function out of Senate Bill 55. So I went back and I listened to what you guys had said, and it seemed like there was some general confusion about some of the work we were doing. There is no such list of debtors with the Legislative Fiscal Office that's contained in this report. I think what they're referring to, again, is the liquidated and delinquent accounts receivable report, which is aggregate information. It doesn't have operational data. The legislature doesn't typically have operational data from the executive branch. So if you have any questions about the work that we're doing on our collections function, I'm happy to answer whatever questions you may have.
Great.
Thank you.
Representative Buehler?
Yeah, and thanks, Chair Fagan, for giving us this time. I appreciate it. And thanks for the clarification. Mm-hmm. And so maybe you won't be able to answer some of these questions, but maybe point us in the right direction. I'm just going to read the two sentences summary of the Secretary of State audit report, which they claim is the sixth report on this topic. It says, quote unquote, liquidated and delinquent receivables owed to the state of Oregon have almost doubled since 2008 to nearly $3.2 billion, while collection rates on the debt have dropped. The state's debt collection system needs more leadership, sustained focus, and accountability to improve performance. What percentage of that $3.2 billion that's owed now, or you corrected it to $3.1, I think, in your comments, is the Department of Revenue directly responsible for?
The Department of, Madam Chair and Representative Buehler, in the 2015 report, you'll see on page, on page 4, it says the top 10 agencies by total receivables outstanding, and you'll see the Judicial Department is listed with almost $1.6 billion. The Department of Revenue is just under $650 million. The Justice Department, again, which is mostly child support, is $404 million. The Employment Department is almost $57 million. It goes on to much smaller agencies. But those debts aren't owed to the general fund. The bulk of what is owed to the general fund is collected and owed, it's under Department of Revenue's purview. Again, we collect 94% of the money that comes into the general fund to be spent. So it stands to reason that our debt balances would be similar, and they actually are. If you look on, I believe, page 7 of the same report, it says top 10 agencies by general fund debts owed the that are owed, and we have 94.56% of that. Our other agency accounts program is responsible for collecting debt that is turned over by our client agencies. So it could be the Judicial Department or Department of Justice or OHSU or any of the number of agencies listed in the LFO report. They're client agencies, and we are responsible. I believe the number for that is also in this report, and it is about $270 million that they have turned over to us for collections. Our other agency accounts program has two types of collection services we offer. One is full collections, where we can issue garnishments and seize property. The other is where an agency just sends the debt to us for offset only, and it can just sit in our accounts receivable waiting for an income tax refund to then offset against the debt. Many agencies do that. We hope more choose to. They can do their own collections while it's sitting at Department of Revenue for offset only. Many agencies choose to do their own collections.
Go ahead.
What have delinquent receivables that's under your purview in the Department of Revenue done over a similar period of time since 2008? So we see a nearly doubling of the overall receivables owed to the state of Oregon. How about in the Department of Revenue?
Madam Chair and Representative Bueller, I would have to look back at the historic LFO reports, which are all available online. But I would assume that they have also grown. I mean, we went through the Great Recession, and many people would file tax returns and owe money because they've adjusted their withholding so that they had more spendable money during the month, or they collected unemployment, which is taxable and often choose to not have withholding on them. So they would end up filing a return, perhaps, that had a tax owed on it, and then we would end up having to collect on it. So I would venture guess that it probably also went up. I don't know that it went up over the same rate.
Go ahead.
And what's your biggest barrier from collecting this residual $650 million? What prohibits the Department of Revenue from, or others for that matter, if you can speak to it?
Yeah, Madam Chair and Representative Bueller, I would venture a guess to say that we don't get to choose our debtors, right? Tax applies to everyone equally. And so we don't get to establish their creditworthiness. We don't get to see if they have a means. We don't get to, like a regular financial institution does, to have a better rate of return. People have severe hardships. Sometimes they become permanently and totally disabled. Sometimes they just become unemployed for some reason. And those are sources of income that we are exempt from collecting from. We can't seize that income. We can't seize Social Security. We can't seize disability, veterans benefits, any of those kinds of things that are considered assistance types payments. Mm-hmm. So I would say if you had to ask me, that would probably be the biggest obstacles, that we just don't get to choose them.
Okay. And do you have internal operational concerns at the Department of Revenue? There's been some highly publicized issues with regards to software conversions and other issues in your department. Has that been resolved, or does that play into this issue in any way?
Chair Fagan and Representative Bueller, I would say we are currently undergoing a core system replacement, and when we say core system, we mean our return processing system, our audit system, our collection system. All of those are being replaced with it was something that was built in the 80s, and it's a 30-year-old system. We're replacing it with a system called Gentax. It's been used widely in, I think, 17 or 18 other states. We're in the second. We've just finished the second of the four rollouts over a four-year period, and both of the two rollouts so far have been successful. There's been no challenges or issues with those rollouts, and we expect the same in the future rollouts. It's been tried and true in many states. I don't know what issues there have been so far. I haven't heard of any.
Great. If we had you come back in a year at our long session, what would you project of the amount of delinquent receivables we would see in the Department of Revenue? So it's 650 now. Can you just give me an idea what we should be targeting for a year from now?
Well,
should we see that number decrease, increase? What's your goal as an agency?
Madam Chair and Representative Bueller, every year new debt is added at about the same rate that it's resolved, because every tax year we have a new obligation that's that comes onto the books. We do have our system currently is very antiquated, and we found when we converted from one system to the other that it cleaned up some of the reporting requirements, especially to the Legislative Fiscal Office. We can't collect on debt that is liquid, that is not liquid and delinquent, and so that means, like, if it's in appeals, it shouldn't be reported. And so we found that the new system actually reports much cleaner than it did before. So I would expect that there's a variety of reasons why it would go up or down, and I wouldn't know how to, you know, forecast that. I would say we will have new debt added for 2015 tax year, and we will have people who pay on older tax year 2014 and earlier in other debts. And I can't project the rates.
You have no goals with regards to your receivables over the next
Madam
year.
Chair and Representative Bueller, we absolutely have goals, and we have I don't know what they are specifically, but they absolutely have goals on the amount of work and production that each staff member is supposed to do. But that isn't the same as whether our accounts receivable will increase or decrease.
You have no goals on projections of what your account receivables do over the next year or so?
Madam Chair,
Performance metrics.
Bueller, I guess that's largely based on what happens in the economy and whether people are able to pay their taxes as they. We do get withholding. We do get estimated tax payments throughout the year. And I think the Office of Economic Analysis and the Legislative Revenue Office and various agencies do forecast what should come in against what does actually come in. So
But you don't have any delinquent collections goals for the receivables?
Madam Chair, Representative Bueller, we do have goals for production, what staff should be collecting. One person shouldn't be sitting there just twiddling their thumbs all day. I mean, obviously, that's not what they would do. They have expectations. But as far as what that overall impact does, that would be, you know, your collections in your revenue report. That would show what the decrease is. That's what we've actually collected.
Representative Hoyle.
So I want to thank you very much. It's just fascinating information. And I think the key thing that you said that really struck me was that you don't get to choose your debtors. You don't get to choose their creditworthiness. You don't get to choose what happens right. in the economy. So when the recession hit in 2009, I talked to a number of people who worked in the revenue department, and they just said, I mean, people lost their jobs. They lost their ability to just pay for basic needs, mm-hmm. and it really impacted for many years our ability to collect the debts that were there. And we don't know what's going forward, but what I hear you saying is that you do have goals, you do have projections. However, you are influenced, your department is influenced by outside forces in a way that a financial institution or, you know, when I was a manager in a business, we had our collections and, you know, and projections. But again, we got to choose who we lent money to, which is very different than. So is that what I hear you saying? That so maybe it would be good if we could get an idea of what are your estimated projections, understanding of what you're going to collect, of what money will be owed in the next biennium, understanding that you are influenced by outside sources in a way that a business may not be.
Yes, and that is exactly, Madam Chair and Representative Hoyle, that's exactly right. And we're happy to see if I can get you the information that the collection managers do for their performance measures.
That would be helpful, and I think it would help answer Representative Bueller's questions as well.
Mm-hmm. Other questions? Representative McLean.
The other item that I thought you said that really was helpful to me was the fact that you do have personal productivity goals for all of your workers, mm-hmm. and I think that information would also help answer some of those questions that you were given, generally speaking. And I'm assuming the goal is to collect all of it, and that's an ongoing process, but we have to do it with all of those particulars and all those variables that both Representative Hoyle talked about and then also just the economy, generally speaking.
That's correct.
But those would be great if you had those.
Mm-hmm. Any further comments or questions? Okay, go ahead, Representative Polby.
I was just curious, when did the legislature give you the funding to get this new program?
Madam Chair, Representative Holby, the budgetary approval for transitioning to gin tax was approved in the 2013 legislative session, and in the very final days of that, we got the go-ahead for the funding. The first rollout occurred with the corporate and tobacco tax programs last year in 2014. 2015, we just transferred the personal income tax program, which is the biggest tax program by number of people affected. We have 1.9 million taxpayers filing a return every year, and so that was the biggest impact by people. This next rollout, we're going to transition our withholding and payroll tax program, which I know you're very aware of that program, and we are going to also be transferring our other agency accounts program in rollout three, and then rollout four is going to be all our other small programs, such as I can't even list them all. There's just we have so many tax programs that we administer. All the remaining of them are in the rollout four.
All right. Any further questions or comments? All right. Thank you very much for coming.
Yeah, you're welcome.
So, colleagues, as Victoria indicated, this, and I think this was very relevant testimony. So, thank you, Representative Vice Chair Bueller, for asking that she be available, because I think that just is helpful in the overall look at auditing and collecting the bill before us. Victoria, will you just give us, just so we kind of remember how narrow the bill before us is, give us kind of another quick summary.
Sure. House Bill 4065 establishes procedures for contracting agencies to determine if contractors are delinquent in payments to state agencies and require payment of account or development of a payment plan prior to awarding future public contracts. Requires the contracting agency to notify the state agency of action. Requires the state agency to direct the Department of Revenue or private collection agencies to cease efforts to collect amounts due upon receiving notice. Becomes operative January 1st, 2017, and the proposed -1 amendments add the word state before the phrase contracting agency wherever it appears, so it does not apply to anything other than state contracting agencies.
And then will you describe the dash one? Oh, you just did. Okay, that was dash one. Okay, great. With that, I will take a motion on the dash one.
Madam Chair.
Yes.
I move to adopt the dash one amendment dated February 2nd, 2016.
Are you trying out for a radio program?
Yeah.
Mr. Representative Rayfield moves to adopt the dash one. This is to 4065.
Did you say that?
Yeah.
Representative Rayfield moves to adopt the dash one amendments dated 2216 to House Bill 4065. Is there any discussion on the amendment? Okay, seeing none, is there any objection? Okay, seeing none, the amendments are adopted, and I will entertain a motion on the bill as amended.
Thank you. Madam Chair. I move House Bill 4065 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference.
Representative Rayfield dramatically moves House Bill 4065 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference. Is there any discussion? Representative Stark.
Madam Chair, I was just wondering if he could repeat his motion.
I thought you were going to ask if he's going to tell us what he won, Bob. Any further discussion? Okay, seeing none, the clerk will please call the roll.
Representative Colby.
Aye.
Representative Boyle.
Aye.
Representative McLean.
Aye.
Representative Nierman.
Aye.
Representative Stark.
Yes.
Vice Chair Bueller.
Yes.
Vice Chair Rayfield?
Yes.
Chair Fagan?
Yes. And the motion passes, and I believe that we will have Representative Witt carry that bill.
It's going to Ways and
Means. Oh, excuse me. Okay. Ways and Means, please let Representative Witt carry that bill. Okay, with that, I see Representative Kennemer here, and so out of deference for a member, I'm going to actually go ahead and continue on to and open a work session on House Bill 4106. And Representative Kannenberg, go ahead and come up. And Victoria, will you give us a quick reminder of this bill and what the Dash 2 does?
Sure. Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 4106 prohibits state agencies from relying only upon expediency, convenience, best interest of public, general public need, or speculation as the basis for finding of prejudice that authorizes temporary adoption, amendment, or suspension of rules. The Dash 2 amendments delete the requirement that agency not rely only on expedience, convenience, best interest of public, general public need, or speculation as basis for finding of prejudice that authorizes temporary adoption, amendment, or suspension of rules, and adds a requirement for all state agencies to report to the Legislative Assembly annually on rules adopted.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Bill Kennemer, State Representative, District 39. Thank you for the previous hearing on Tuesday. And just to follow up, Department of Justice had concern about one word, actually, and we worked and got the amendment with their assistance. That's the Dash 2 that is before you. It also greatly simplifies the bill. As it deletes several pages, and it's a lot clearer. I think our concern is that I'd like to see a slowdown with the use of some of these temporary rules. As one of my constituents wrote me this morning, the adoption of temporary rules completely excludes the public from providing any input into the adoption of these rules. And this begins to put in place something that I think will slow that down a bit and also give us an indication of how frequently it's being used and provide a tool for us to see whether or not further guidance is needed in the future. I think it's part of creating transparent, open, and accountable government and the kinds of things that we support. And I'm open to any questions or comments you might have.
Thank you, Representative. Questions or comments for our colleague, Representative McLean?
So this takes out the word demonstrate.
Yes.
And it simply becomes a report back to us so we can see what the nature of those emergencies are.
That's what it does.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Stark.
Thank you, Chair. More of a statement, but thank you for bringing this forward. We've discussed in several other committees one of the issues that brought this forward, and I find it quite offensive that one of our agencies that I personally believe their lack of transparency strong-armed an organization into signing a contract. And so I'm glad that we are dealing with this so that there won't be a question about those actions in the future.
Thank you. If I may respond to
please.
That. Yes, I think changing rates retroactively without the courtesy of a public discussion is inappropriate, highly inappropriate. Okay.
Any other further comments or questions?
Yeah.
Representative Holby.
I just have a question for staff about the fiscal impact statement. I'm not seeing one online.
The fiscal, Chair Fagan, Representative Holby, the fiscal impact statement was negative. The revenue and impact statement was minimal. Revenue statement was also minimal on the Dash 2s.
Thank you.
Further questions or comments? All right. Thank you, Representative.
Thank you.
And with that, I will entertain a motion on the Dash 2.
Yes, Chair Fagan, I move in less dramatic fashion to adopt the Dash 2 amendments dated 2-10-16 on House Bill 4106.
Representative Buehler has very boringly moved to adopt the Dash 2 amendments dated 2-10-16. Is there any discussion on the amendments? Okay, seeing none, is there any objection? All right, seeing none, the amendments are adopted, and I'll entertain a motion on the bill as amended.
Chair Fagan, I move House Bill 4106 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Buehler has moved House Bill 4106 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Okay, seeing none, will the clerk please call the roll?
Representative Holby?
Aye.
Representative Hoyle?
Aye.
Representative McLean?
Aye.
Representative Nierman?
Aye.
Representative Stark?
Yes.
Vice Chair Buehler?
Yes.
Vice Chair Rayfield?
Yes.
Chair Fagan?
Yes. With that, the motion is passes. Motion passes. And we will have Representative Kennemer and Representative Gomberg co-carry that bill. Thank you, Representative. Right, and with that, I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 4122. And do you want to give us a quick update on that?
Sure.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 4122 allows local government to inhibit or prevent production or use of seed or seed products for purpose of protecting seed or seed products that are not genetically engineered from adverse impacts of genetically engineered seed or products. The proposed Dash 3 amendments replace the measure with labeling requirements for genetically engineered fish destined for human consumption and direct the State Department of Agriculture to adopt rules as it establishes effective dates. The Dash 3 amendments also have a minimal fiscal and a minimal revenue impact.
Right. Representative Holby, did you want to?
Madam Chair, I'd like to request the written testimony from Don Tipping, who actually testified here on the committee day but did not leave his written testimony and submitted yesterday, I believe, be entered into the public record. I think we can do that during the work session.
Okay, great. And since we didn't really have much opportunity to ask questions, this was the bill that had a lot of public testimony. Colleagues, do you have any questions that you want to direct to Representative Holby as the sponsor of the bill, both on the underlying bill or on the amendment? Representative?
I do. Thank you, Chair Fagan. So Representative Holby, on the salmon amendment, I think that's the Dash 3 amendment, is that right?
That's correct.
So I don't understand the need for that, because right now, as I understand the situation is that the feds have approved GE salmon but have kind of put that on hold pending the federal government coming up with a labeling requirements on that. So I can't imagine. So what that amendment does is has state required label requirements, whatever, either the federal ones are going to preempt the state ones or render the state ones unnecessary. So why is this amendment necessary?
This amendment is to join with the state of Alaska and many communities to try to put pressure on the federal government to move forward with a labeling requirement and to put on the books that the state of Oregon supports labeling of the genetically engineered fish.
Can you follow? So I'm not misunderstanding then that the federal government is going to have a labeling requirement, right? I mean that's why they've put it on hold, right?
Well, I don't know that we can be sure that will happen. The bill that is requesting the labeling is an appropriations bill, which in my contact with our federal delegation will expire. And it may be that that doesn't happen readily. You are correct. If the federal, the legal opinion I got, if the federal government does adopt a labeling requirement that is accepted and offers the consumer the information they need to identify that as genetically engineered fish, it would most probably preempt Oregon's labeling law at that time.
Thank you.
And Greg,
I am not an attorney. I'm just, you know,
just play one in the legislature.
Yeah, just I have a right to play one here.
And it seems like it's a little bit more politics than law on that issue, the way you explain it. So.
And federal law can change as well, you know, on this issue. Yeah. So,
as can state law. So
as
we,
can
we
state
could
laws.
Come back later.
And actually, there's been it's kind of relevant to that. Mr. Peden, do you want to come up? The Pacific Seafood at least has reached an agreement with Representative Holby about some language that will be inserted on the Senate side. So if you want to speak to that, Greg.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Greg Peden here on behalf of Pacific Seafood. I want to remind the committee one important fact as it relates to the genetically modified salmon, and that is that prior to the approval this past fall of the fish from the FDA had studied this issue for 25 years. I don't know, but I doubt that any other food product has gone through such a lengthy and rigorous approval process from the FDA before reaching approval. That's a very important piece of this overall puzzle to the commercial fishing industry. And because of that, what we have asked Representative Holvey to consider was some language that we intend to insert on the Senate side, stating that the FDA has determined that genetically altered or engineered salmon are safe for human consumption. That's a very important part of the puzzle. So I don't have specific language today, but to that effect, as I've just described, and I think we've reached that that part of it, and with that, we're satisfied with the bill.
All right. Thank you.
Yeah, great.
And I might add, I have also talked with Katie Fass from the Oregonians for Food and Shelter, and we're noodling on some language perhaps to consider in the Senate as well.
Okay. Good to know. Representative Stark?
Thank you, Chair Fagan. And either of you can answer this. Why in the Senate? The reason I asked is we've already discovered oftentimes they think differently than the House. And I guess that's what happens when you're the lower chamber.
Body of the people.
Yes. So, but why not, as we've been doing all day, or I mean, we did all day yesterday, send it to rules and get those amendments on this side, as opposed to sending it over there hoping that it'll be amended with this?
Well, I can answer that. I mean, it's not a matter of necessarily hoping. It's, I mean, agreement between the bill's chief sponsor and, you know, an organization that was opposing the bill to have that language, and the reality was just mostly a matter of time. I think we came up with this agreement, like, outside of the floor session today, and there just wasn't time to get the language drafted and the you know, FSRES statement on it in order to move the bill today, because today is the last day, and rules is a good place for a lot of bills in this instance because there's already agreement. It's easier just to send it over to the Senate and let it be working over there. Rules will often be, something will often be put to rules if we're close to an agreement, but it's not quite there. Here we have an agreement, and so it makes sense to send it over to the Senate and let that be over there, and then we'll obviously have to vote to concur on whatever changes the Senate makes. So. Representative Nierman and then Representative McLean.
Okay. So I want to just talk a little bit about the underlying bill. So I'm not really an ag person. I grew up in Beaverton. So but I kind of live in an ag district, and I'm trying my hardest to be an ag person. So I try to hang out with farmers and ag people as much as I can. One of the things that impresses me about for the farming community, at least where I talk to them in the Willamette Valley, is that they solve their problems by talking to each other, or I should say they try to solve their problems by talking to each other and working with each other. And that, to me, that's so impressive to me and so superior to the idea of the government coming in and solving it, or even putting something on a ballot and saying this 51% of the people get to clobber this 49% of the people. And I feel bad that if that system of trust that's grown up, you know, over the many, many, many decades, at least in the Willamette Valley, would be, you know, damaged or put aside, you know, in favor of a system that kind of favored just a more bureaucratic solution. So however this turns out, if that's the way it turns out, I'm kind of saddened by that. So I'll just leave that as a comment.
Do you want to let them know that it replaces the...
Yeah, Madam Chair, are we under a motion on the dash three, or
we have not had a motion yet?
Oh,
we're
well,
still...
you know, I'll just respond if I could to Representative Nierman. I agree. I wish things could be worked out, but sometimes I think that's part of the frustration of the issue on the underlying bill, is that there really isn't a system to address this contamination problem, and the mediation doesn't necessarily replace the economic loss to the farmers who suffer that contamination. And so the frustration, I think, from that group of farmers is that since the passage of Senate Bill 863 in the 2013 special session, the Oregon Department of Agriculture has not solved that issue, and the task force made no recommendations. And so I think that issue has yet to be solved, and I'm hoping that in the future it will get solved. And I think they presented this issue, and you know, I think they have a legitimate issue that needs to be solved, and I hope either the Department of Agriculture solves it, or or the legislature will solve it in the future. That's you know, my point on that. So,
thank you. Representative McLean.
Well, my comments are also on the underlying bill, and one of the comments that was made to me yesterday are you going to vote for the underlying bill and support farmers? And that I want to talk about that comment, because I really believe that we had a room full of farmers and growers and agricultural folks. And as a fifth-generation Oregonian, I have watched crops be added to our, you know, to our base line of crops, to over 200 crops. And so I really agree with Representative Nierman that I'm hoping that we can find a pathway that will allow all farmers and all agricultural growers and all crops to coexist in the state of Oregon. Now, I agree with Representative Hovey that if we can't find that pathway, if the farming and agricultural industry cannot help us find that pathway, well, then we need to look to others to try and figure out how to help, again, growers in the state of Oregon. But it's one of those situations, again, where I think that, as Representative Nierman said, let's go for cooperation and let's go for continuing to look for that pathway before, and let's not preempt that possible pathway. And there's one other clue that wasn't mentioned so far, and that is I did not have the counties running in, jumping up and down, and saying they thought this was a local issue at this point. I had one or two county representatives and or residents who said that to me. But again, I think you need to get your counties involved in this conversation and in the solution pathway, because I think it's really important to understand that those folks may not be asking to take on that responsibility. And so if they're unwilling, that also doesn't mean necessarily a solution that's going to be apparent or fair or successful in any way. So I hope the dialogue will continue, and I hope that as much as you want to be on your farms and continuing not to come into the Capitol, that at least you can send people to report back that you're doing well.
Representative Stark.
Thank you, Chair Fagan. Representative McLean, I represent two counties who have been very, very involved on the underlying bill and have had a lot
those
to say about that.
Those were the two that came in.
Yes, they were my people from home. And so, however, I just want to clarify and make sure we're all understanding that the intent here in a moment is, or we're expecting a motion on the dash threes, which would remove the underlying and deal specifically with the fish labeling. That's where we're headed. Okay, not that we can, and I highly expect that we will continue having conversations related to the underlying bill, but I think that ship has somewhat sailed today.
Do you want to just do a motion and have that be?
After a comment? Perhaps.
Okay, please.
I recognize Representative McLean's statement, but I do want to note that the underlying bill didn't require counties to take on this responsibility. It just gave them, you know, under our home rule charter in the state of Oregon, the ability to do that. So it was a matter of the potential local control to step in, you know, if they saw in their area where their predominant industry was being impacted by the lack of action by the state, they could do that.
Yes.
And so, just for clarity, and Madam Chair, I'd move the adoption of the Dash 3 amendment to HB 4122.
Representative Holvey has moved to adopt the Dash 3 amendments dated February 8th of 16 to House Bill 4122. Is there any further discussion? I would just want to note that, you know, there was a lot of compelling testimony on Tuesday on the underlay. You know, as we're now moving to replace the underlying bill with the amendment. So I just want to make a note that, you know, I hope that we do, at least by considering this bill and the testimony that we heard on both sides, do pressure the Department of Ag and the task force to come up with a solution, because of all the testimony we heard, the most compelling thing to me was the woman who talked about this particular strain of bean that came in the country in like the hem of a woman's skirt. And the problem is, if we, you know, there is some urgency to this issue, and I hope the Department of Ag will hear us say there's urgency to this, because there are certain things that can never be replaced. If that bean genre goes away, even if the Department of Ag decides to act 2 years from now, there are certain things that could never come back again. And so there is an urgency to this, and there are certain things that will be a permanent and ongoing harm that will never be able to be replaced. And I thought that was, at least to me, the most moving example of something that really is at stake here. And so I hope that the Department of Agriculture will hear us and will act with some urgency to make sure that this, the intent of the grand bargain bill, is carried out, and that there is a procedure by which these farmers can have some recourse in that urgent situation where a particular strand of bean is at risk of becoming extinct. So with that, that's my only comment. Any further discussion on replacing the measure with the Dash 3 amendment? Okay, is there any objection? Okay, will the clerk please call the roll?
Representative Holby?
Aye.
Representative Coyle?
Aye.
Representative McClain?
Aye.
Representative Nierman?
No.
Representative Stark?
Yes.
Vice Chair Bueller?
No.
Vice Chair Rayfield?
Yes.
Chair Fagan?
Yes. And the amendments are adopted. And with that, I will entertain a motion on the bill as amended.
Madam Chair, I feel it's my duty to note that generally the vice chair makes motions to adopt amendments, and I felt a little slighted by Representative Holvey and his brash nature on this committee to take over my responsibilities.
Perhaps the Department of Ag will set up a mediation opportunity for legislators who hurt each other's feelings.
If the Department of Ag is listening right now.
Because the chair asked me for the motion.
With that objection now formally on the record for all Oregonians to hear, Madam Chair, I move House Bill 4122 as amended to the floor with a do pass recommendation.
Representative Rayfield moves House Bill 4122 as amended to the floor with a do pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Yes.
So, Madam Chair, just wanted to throw my stance out there. Your response with the agreement and sending it over to the Senate, that's quite logical. I personally would rather see those amendments on this side. So I'm going to be a no vote today if those amendments are made and comes, back for back over here for, now I forget the term.
Concurrence.
Concurrence, thank you. Then I will definitely reconsider that vote, but I'm going to be a no at this point.
Okay. Further discussion? Okay, seeing none, will the clerk please call the roll?
Representative Holby?
Aye.
Representative Coyle?
Aye.
Representative McClain?
Aye.
Representative Nierman?
No.
Representative Stark?
No.
Vice Chair Bueller?
No.
Vice Chair Rayfield?
Yes.
Chair Fagan?
Yes. The motion passes, and I'm assuming that Representative Holvey would like to carry that bill. For the sake of its passage, do you want anybody else to carry it, possibly? All right, with that, Representative Holvey's going to roll the dice, and he's going to carry the bill. Oh, we're having too much fun today. Okay, with that, I'm going to close the work session on House Bill 4122 and open a work session on House Bill 4058. And do you want to remind us what that bill is?
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 4058 permits a corporation with shares that are registered under Oregon or federal securities law to reject the vote, consent, waiver, or proxy authorization if shareholder has not complied with public disclosure requirements of Oregon or federal securities law, declares an emergency, and is effective on passage. We have proposed Dash 2 amendments that establish that the corporation must reject actions of all shareholders not in compliance with disclosure requirements and must accept actions once shareholders become compliant. Let's see. No fiscal impact, no revenue impact on the Dash 2 amendments.
All right. Thank you. Bill, do you want to go ahead and come up? Just so that, colleagues, if you recall, there was an attorney, not a lobbyist, but an attorney from the Oregon State Bar who expressed some concerns kind of just from the bar's securities group. And so I thought that Mr. Cross did not have an opportunity to respond to those comments, again, because of time on Tuesday. So I just thought I would give you an opportunity if you wanted, or colleagues, if you have questions based on the testimony of the Oregon State Bar. So I would give you an opportunity.
Madam Chair, committee members, thank you for the opportunity. The many of the defenses that the attorney...
Oh, state your name.
Oh. There would be that.
Rookie mistake, Bill. Rookie mistake.
Bill Cross, and I'm here today on behalf of Willamette Valley Vineyards. And the defenses that the attorney raised are more appropriate for larger companies, larger publicly held companies that have either won lots of dollars for attorney fees to build in some of those defenses, and or two, where they have many shareholders who are represented by investment bankers, that type of thing. So when they're voting in proxies, they've got blocks of votes that can pass bylaw changes that he alluded to. For smaller publicly held companies, it's difficult just to get a quorum, through the proxy votes, because many of them don't have, investment bankers or investment analysts or brokers that are representing them, that are filling out their proxies. So for some of the smaller publicly held companies, all the bill would do would be another possible defense, provide another option. It's not mandated, and I'd be happy to answer questions, but we'd appreciate your support.
All right. Any questions for Mr. Cross? I don't think anybody understands this bill, apparently. There's a lot of blank faces, but you guys have done a good job of explaining it. Representative Hack wasn't able to be here today. It is a complicated topic. I did appreciate the Oregon State Bar weighing in, and I imagine conversation will continue on the Senate side, but I appreciate your testimony. So is there no questions for Bill? Any further comments? Yeah.
One further one, Madam Chair. We appreciated the feedback that we had received from the bar, before the hearing, because the bill had been forwarded to them, and hence the dash two amendments,
right,
which do help clarify and specify how those bylaws might come into play if a company were to exercise that option. So we do appreciate their input, and would definitely recommend that the dash two amendments be adopted if the bill is to move forward.
All right. Thank you. Representative Holvey.
Madam Chair, did we hear from the members of the State Bar on the amendments? They suggested them, or they're okay with them?
I haven't heard from anybody. I know there's somebody. Did you? Not the securities expert in the back, though.
I'm not a securities expert.
Right. She's with the bar.
She
has to come up.
Oh, go ahead. You have to come up if you're going to make any comments. Sorry.
Sorry.
That would be a fun way to do committee, though, just have like a passing mic. Wouldn't that be fun? Just people to stay in their seats. Go ahead.
Hi. Amy Zupko, Oregon State Bar. The amendments were shared with the securities regulations. It was actually Chris Hall is a member of the business law section prior to the hearing, and so he has seen them. As for, I can't speak for the section or Mr. Hall, who is here on his own and not representing the bar officially when he attended the hearing on earlier this week.
So,
Madam Chair.
Yeah.
So I assume if he's seen him, if he had a problem with him, he would be here. It's an assumption, I guess, but so.
Any further comments or questions? Yes, Representative McLean.
Well, as I listened to the lawyer the last time from the bar, and I can't remember his name. But
that was Chris Hall.
Chris Hall. Okay. And so I felt, as was described by Mr. Cross today, that he was talking about a different, segment of the population of businesses. And so I feel very comfortable with what I saw in the way of amendments and what we're trying to achieve for a particular type of public company. So I think it's important that if there are problems, that we'll have to address them in the future.
Any further comments or questions? Okay. Thank you guys very much. All right. With that, I will entertain a motion on the dash two.
Sorry. Chair Fagan, I move to adopt the dash two amendments dated 2/10/16 on House Bill 4058.
I have amendments dated 2/8/16 on mine.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I'm sorry. 2/8/16.
Does he need to withdraw his previous motion?
No, it's
okay.
Clarification.
You want to make a clarification, Representative?
Yeah, for purpose of clarification, I move to adopt the dash two amendments dated 2/8/16 on House Bill 4058.
Thank you. Representative Bueller moves to adopt the dash two amendments dated 2/8/16. Is there any discussion on the dash twos? I would just say thank you to Representative Hack and to Willamette Valley Vineyards for working at least to, to try and clarify to address some of the concerns that were brought forward. So with, if there are no further discussions on the dash two, Representative Holby.
I don't have any discussion on the dash two.
Okay.
Sorry.
Is there any objection? Okay, seeing none, the amendments are adopted, and I'll entertain a motion on the underlying bill as amended.
Chair Fagan, I move House Bill 4058 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Bueller has moved House Bill 4058 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Representative Holby.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I will be supporting this measure, but out of some caution, I'm going to declare a potential conflict of interest because I am a shareholder of corporations in Oregon that could be impacted by this bill and may impact my loss or profit from those investments. Thank you.
Do you need to submit that in writing to the clerk? Okay. Thank you very much. Further discussion? Okay, seeing none, the clerk, please call the roll.
Representative Holby?
Aye.
Representative Hoyle?
Aye.
Representative McLean?
Aye.
Representative Nierman?
Aye.
Representative Stark?
Yes.
Vice Chair Bueller?
Yes.
Vice Chair Rayfield?
Yes.
Chair Fagan?
Yes. The motion passes, and I'm assuming Representative Hack would like to carry that bill, so we'll assign her as the carrier. All right, colleagues, we'll
Close the work session
on House Bill 4058. And I believe that is everything on our agenda. At this point, I don't think we do. We have any Senate bills yet?
No, we don't have any Senate bills yet, Madam Chair. You had wanted to do a public hearing again on 4138 on Tuesday. Is that correct?
Let's move that to Thursday then. Oh, so colleagues, we're not going to meet on Tuesday, and whatever Senate bills we have, we will deal with on Thursday. But at this point, we don't have any, so we may just keep. I'll keep you posted on Thursday, but we will not meet on Tuesday. You're welcome. Anything else for the good of the order? Okay, with that, I'm going to close the House Committee on Consumer Protection and Government Effectiveness. We did it. Consumer Protection and Government Effectiveness.